Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. I do have a comment to start out with that I thought might be very helpful for everyone. And we do like to get comments in to our radio programs, so please keep them coming. But this was just later in July, and it's about the Jane Austen Pride and Prejudice. So because we tape in advance, it's hard to keep comments, right up as we're taping. So this is, even though we're not talking about Jane Austen right now, this is still, I think, a good comment. It says, "Hello, JBL. I have been really enjoying your show, Just the Best Literature. It has so many really great books, and the discussions bring real depth to the way we read and think about the literature we have enjoyed. I believe Jane Austen wanted to show what outcome the choices bring if you act on immediate passion or learn to hold back those passions and have more character in your choices in life and marriage. The last bit of the book tells what the lives are like for those girls and their marriages. It shows they repeated what they sowed. When they put in the effort and sacrifice in the beginning, they reap joy. When they put in no immediate effort and sacrifice, they reaped pain and suffering. Thank you so much for this show. It's truly wonderful." And that's from the state of California. So we do like to have those comments. Well, we want to get right back into our 60-plus panel discussion of Dickens' Great Expectations. So with me today again in the studio are Daryl Hope. Hello, Daryl.
Hello.
And Deborah Leap. Hello, Deborah.
Hello, thank you.
And we also have our special guest, Sarah Evans. Hello,
Sarah. Good to
be
back. Hello.
Good to have you. And again, remember, Sarah has not attained to the great age of 60-plus, but we do like her, and we do like what she has to say. Okay, so panel, last time we talked about our impressions of the book as a whole, and I thought today that since we have two very well-educated women, two women who loved to read great books, I thought we would discuss the main female characters in the book, and so this is going to be your show, and then for you listeners out there, we're going to have two more programs for you, and we're going to pull together a men's panel, and we'll talk about the male characters in the book. But I think there are at least five main female characters. There's Mrs. Jo, there's Biddy, there's Estella, there's Miss Havisham, and there's Miss Belinda Pocket. Now, to start out with Mrs. Jo, I want to read you what Mr. Jo says about her, and we'll see if you agree. Okay, so this is from page 47 of the book, and I know that there's nothing more wonderful than a husband who loves his wife no matter what she does. But this is the if I could set up the scene a little bit. Pip's been having some trouble with his sister, and of course we know that she does not like Pip, and she's always telling Pip how hard it's been for her to help raise him. But Jo is really trying to work hard to defend her. He says, this is the bottom of page 47, "Whatever family opinions or whatever the world's opinions on the subject may be, Pip, your sister is." And then it stops there, and he says, Jo tapped the top bar with a poker after every word following, "A fine figure of a woman." I could think of nothing better to say than, "I'm glad you think so, Jo." So that's what Jo thinks, and he tapped the bar every time, "A fine figure of a woman." So, ladies, so would you agree? Is she a fine figure of a woman? Go ahead, Deborah.
Well, in terms of what do you mean by fine figure of a woman? I think Joe was always being very positive, and I believe in a fine figure. Maybe he thought that she looked nice, and so he's being positive about her. But in terms of how she acted with especially with Pip and in general, it it seems like she certainly, she had a chip on her shoulder and was very negative about her life, and was one of those women that, you know, sometimes you see women that are, that they just, everything they do is hard, or it's like, and the fact they're doing it is just a hard thing, and they should get rewarded for the fact they're doing it. They're doing it, and it just seems like that's she had that kind of attitude. But Joe was very positive about her. So,
okay, Sarah.
I definitely think that statement tells us far more about Joe than it does about Mrs. Joe. Yeah, and even the way she's described, she's not even described as being physically attractive at all. That there was something about she's so red that you'd think she like scrubbed herself with, you know, something very prickly.
Yeah, that's Pip's description.
Yes, right. Yes. So you really don't even think she could be physically attractive either. How they ended up getting together, it's a mystery. You know, Joe talks about, you know, standing up in church with her and pledging, and I'm like, how did he end up asking her to marry him? But she does seem to be one of those very harsh people who's always telling everyone how she's been doing her duty. She wants everyone to see that she's doing what she should do by Pip and getting the praise for it from, you know, Mr. Wopsle and Mr., you know, the Uncle Pumblechook and such. So the reward that she seeks is, that's all there is, because she's clearly not developing any sense of affection for Pip or getting any love in return. When I first read it when I was young, I found the whole change of personality after the attack completely baffling. And it was only later, after learning and studying more about the way the brain works, I thought, maybe she suffered a really severe trauma to the front of the skull, which is the personality center.
Yes.
Because that's the only explanation for suddenly understanding why she could become much kinder, even though suffering clearly a lot of brain damage as well. She suddenly is supposed to be this much kinder, softer, repentant person. And then she's much more likable, you know, after this savage attack, strangely.
You know, we talked last time about, you know, how the book is about change, you know, and how the characters change. So she gets changed.
Through brain damage.
With brain damage. Yes. You know, so I guess if you need a little change, maybe you need a little brain damage. But for me, and of course, Daryl, we're going to get you involved in this too. But for me, even if she was attractive, I mean, my image of her is that she kind of reminds me of the I probably shouldn't do this. It's not in my notes, but the lady that's in Tale of Two Cities, the head of the rebellion. What's her name?
Madame Defarge.
Yes. She kind of reminds me of the Madame Defarge of, you know, Great Expectations, because, you know, it's like, it seems like everything is a hassle. There's only one scene where I could almost like her, and that's the holiday scene where she invites people over and she has this nice dinner. But that's a whole nother funny scene because of all the people that are there. But it just seems like, you know, instead of being, you know, telling everyone, look at me, you know, I've raised Pip by hand, and, you know, that's such a labor for me. Well, you know, it didn't seem to be all that much of a labor. He doesn't seem like that bad of a kid, you know. But then when she's like, she's serving, you know, her uncle at this dinner, and she's really being nice, I thought, wow, there, you know, is it because they were drinking a lot of gin on the holiday or something, you know, that kind of thing. But I think she's just a really great character, and Dickens knows how to portray her. So, Derry, what is?
Well, I think she's you know, obviously very contentious. She's someone that's not a likable character, I don't think, by any means. She is one of the characters that changes, though. Yeah. And it's interesting that she changes, because it's a forced change. Mm-hmm. It's not from within, but it is a forced change. But she provides actually an interesting environment for Pip, you know, because Pip is growing up now under this sort of oppression, and she does provide that oppression. And you wonder what causes a woman to treat a child as cruelly as she seems to treat Pip? There's this injustice there. Looking at her, she seems to be the epitome of injustice in terms of the way she treats Pip. And but her role is important because of what that produces in him later, I think. So
I have a question just to throw out on the table. And again, you know, this is just part of my literature mind thinking is, Mrs. Joe and Mr. Joe don't have any children of their own. Is it possible that she couldn't have children, and so they have Pip, and that she's just jealous, well, this isn't my child, and he's just a thorn in her side because she's kind of weighed down with him? Could that be what went on? I mean, you'd like to be able to talk to Dickens, and I guess we're going to have to wait a while to be able to do that. So, but what do you guys think of that? You know, I mean, there's got to be something behind it that he doesn't tell us.
Well, it's an interesting point, because you think about that in terms of the fact they don't have children, that she would, you think, be very appreciative to have Pip, that she's taking care of now, because this is like a substitute child. But she treats it totally the opposite. Maybe she's unhappy that she doesn't have her own child, and she resents Pip because of that.
She was obviously raising Pip before she got married, because when Joe takes her, he says, you know, and bring the child with you. Mm-hmm. So I wonder, she may have been quite young when her parents died, and for an oldest child, it would have been her responsibility, an oldest female child. Mm-hmm. So to have that burden from potentially a very young age, when life was already very hard and she was trying to provide for him on her own, it's understandable that would have maybe put her out a little bit, or perhaps shortened some of her own goals for her life.
I think that's a really good point. I forgot about that she brought him with her.
That's true. And also, I mean, she obviously came from a hard life, because both the parents died, and there were a bunch of children, brothers and sisters, you know, died as well. So, you know, with the scene there in the graveyard. So
but it does seem to heighten her cruelty. I mean, the fact that she treats Pip the way that she does, whatever her background, for a young woman, it does heighten her level of cruelty, that she becomes more contentious and more unpleasant, more undesirable from the fact that she's packaged that way. Mm-hmm.
She's not motherly at all. And I think Dickens has that in a lot of his female characters through all of his novels. There's a lot of women who you would expect to be and feel sympathetic and motherly, and they don't. Right. And I don't know if that's Dickens' commentary on
I think that's a commentary on his own mother, because they turned him out at 12 to go work in the blacking factory, which was full of rats and vermin and everything. And, you know, he had to give all that money back to the family. So, and he virtually lived on his own. So I bet it's probably a commentary on his own mother. But I do think it's interesting that if you look at the end of the story, when Biddy and Joe get married, they have a child. And it's like Joe loves Pip, but here his own sister really treats him with cruelty. But here then they have their own child, and what do they name their child?
Pip.
You know, so I really think that's interesting. Okay, let's slip into Biddy now, since I brought her up. So what do you think of Biddy? What does everybody think of her?
Well, Biddy, I think, you know, we haven't talked about Estella, but she really is... In some ways, is like the foil to Estella. A foil is a person who is created as a character who has opposite characteristics of another character, and in order to highlight those characteristics. So Biddy is loyal. She has common sense. She's loving. She has empathy. She's compassion. She has all those things that when we talk about Estella does not have. And so I think that's interesting. And so, anyway, that's what
okay.
I'm
well, fine. Okay, Sarah.
Well, I think we were just talking about Mrs. Joe not being maternal at all. Biddy is a very maternal figure from the beginning, and she's only maybe a year older than Pip. And so, when he wants to be educated, he goes to her and says, "Basically, teach me everything you know." And so, this is basically a 9 or 10 year old girl teaching a 8 or 9 year old boy, and to see her kindness, her generosity, when she herself had a very difficult background. She's also sort of orphaned and not being raised in her own nuclear family by any means, doesn't come from a lot of wealth or anything. She doesn't have much to give, but she definitely seems like one of those people that whatever she has, she's willing to give it to you. And to see that maternal care, even when Mrs. Joe needs caretaking, the very non-maternal Mrs. Joe, who do they get? Biddy, the most gentle, soft, kind, compassionate person who's able to even learn how to communicate with Mrs. Joe when really nobody else can. She can communicate with Pip. She obviously forms a bond with Joe. She's just a beautiful, kind individual from a very young age. And I again, because I love David Copperfield, in my mind, Biddy reminds me so much of Agnes, just a very, very similar kind of person. Agnes coming from a slightly higher social standing in Dickens' novel, David Copperfield. But I think she feels like the same person.
Yeah. I think Biddy has such incredible practical wisdom. And, you know, there's the whole scene where, you know, I think Pip must be middle teenage years, and you know, he's in love with Estella. He's actually just like totally taken in by her, and she despises him because he's just a common laborer. And he's there, and there's a scene where he opens up to Biddy, and he tells him his heart. Which he can never do with Estella, mm-hmm. anyway. Or he never would want to do it with her. But then he just tells her that he's in love with her, and, you know, he wants to be a gentleman. And she just goes, why? Why would you even want that? You know, she doesn't like you, you know. And then he even realizes, well, this is the person I really love. But it's like people don't understand, I think. Not everything has to be in life, has to be like this super romance. And, you know, it's like there is like levels of love where, you know, it's based on loyalty, it's based on friendship, it's based on, you know, having experiences together. And it's not necessarily the 100 strings you're playing all the time. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what he was after. He wanted the 100 strings, or he wanted, you know, this romantic thing, and he just couldn't necessarily have it with Biddy because he was so familiar with her. And also I think he just got taken in by that whole thing. We talked about a little bit about it last program. He got taken in by, you know, in society, the biggest like thing he could aspire to was being a gentleman, but not being a gentleman in the necessarily the best sense. It was the gentleman that what Estella wanted him to be, or what Miss Havisham wanted him to be. And so to me, I would just like to have met Biddy and talked to her. I could think she'd be the, you know, a kind friend to everybody kind of thing. So
she is. Biddy is the positive character in the novel, to the same degree that I think Mrs. Joe is sort of a negative character in the novel. Mrs. Joe becomes neutralized at the end by the events that take place. Biddy doesn't need any neutralizing because she's positive all the way through it. And then you have these other characters that actually change through it. So you sort of have these two consistent characters, and then you have the ones that change, and that's what makes it very interesting.
Yes. Yeah, he's really kind of a master at that. Okay, now we've talked about Biddy, let's get into Estella. So we'll let you take the lead here, Sarah.
Speaking of characters who change, Estella is definitely one of those. And it's funny because you don't see her sort of on screen, as it were, you know, quite as often. She's actually not in the novel very much for being the main love interest of Pip's life. I never understood, I still don't. I don't know what Pip is supposed to have seen in her originally at 8 or 9 years old, other than a pretty girl. And then he meets her again, of course, when she's now a beautiful young woman. And he's been taken with her from the beginning. And what that's about, I don't know. It's a mystery kind of thing to me. But I do, and I never liked Estella. I just always saw her as uppity and cruel. And you start to understand why exactly that is, because you start to see the role that Miss Havisham plays in that. But seeing Estella start to realize that really made me, I won't say I started liking her, but seeing her self-awareness was huge. So that interaction when she's with Miss Havisham, and Miss Havisham is sort of clinging to her and, you know, pulling her to her, and you actually see Miss Havisham trying to be very affectionate, which was surprising. And Estella is very standoffish, and Miss Havisham is, you know, well, how could you do this to me? I'm your adopted mother. And Estella basically has this moment where she says, what do you mean, how could I do this to you? You taught me to do this. You taught me to not love, to avoid the light. And she just has this moment of recognizing why she is the way she is. She doesn't even really blame Miss Havisham for it, because she understands Miss Havisham was hurt in her own love aspirations. So she's not blaming anybody. She's simply saying, this is why I am the way I am. She doesn't yet see a problem with the way she is until later events. But that awakening, which is all kind of, I think that's in about chapter 38, that's where suddenly I'm seeing some self-awareness in her, where it gives potential that, okay, maybe something can happen with her. And I really think Dickens does a great job with that.
I don't know if you've ever watched the Addams Family show. They keep saying, like, Estella's so pretty. And I know Miss Havisham, you know, would say to Pip, well, she's very pretty, isn't she, Pip? And then he's a bit, and then, you know, I have a feeling that Pip, you know, his facial expression showed, well, yeah, she's a witch, you know, and then Miss Havisham wouldn't let him say anything bad, you know, but then he could whisper in her ear. But she reminds me, Estella reminds me of, like, the daughter on the Addams Family. You know, it's like, I imagine, even though she was pretty, she had this dark black hair and the gothic, you know, the gothic lipstick on and the gothic eyes, you know. And when she comes, it's like he's, when he goes to her place, you know, it's all, Miss Havisham's place, it's all iron bars and it's all rusty. I imagine all this overgrowth and the windows are all shady. And then here comes this girl with keys to let him in. You know, it's like he's, you know, like Uncle Fester is going to show up too, right. You know, or Frankenstein is going to be there. And so she really is a dark character. Estella is very dark. And, you know, but the thing that is so, to me, that is like great crafting on Dickens' part is to put Miss Havisham and her together. And to see this dynamic where Miss Havisham actually corrupts her to hate men and to, you know, to not, you know, it's like she ruins her life because her life is ruined. And, of course, you know, I know that a lot of young people get involved in dating situations. And, you know, we have our four daughters and we went through every dating situation with them. And I, you know, they would date and then it would fall apart and they'd be upset. And I say, look, very rarely does anybody marry the first girl they ever date, you know. And you know, Pip had that opportunity. You know, he could compare Estella with Biddy, but he didn't take it far enough. And then, of course, when he wants to marry Biddy, it's too late. And I think it's amazing that here, Sweet Joe gets Sweet Biddy, you know, so. So anyway,
it's interesting in the characterization you're talking about Estella and the fact that she's a dark character. But if you look at her name, Estella means star. So her name is a star, and yet she's a star in this sort of black universe where she lives. And the first time you see her with a candle. So she's walking through this darkness with a candle. It's sort of like I have this impression of her being a blonde kind of person.
Oh, really?
with light hair and light complexion because of her name. Yeah. Her name being Estella, but she's a dark character. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would have assumed dark complexion simply because the gypsy blood that we find out about.
Oh, right. Right.
So I've always thought more, and maybe that's why she's allowed to be a little bit more exotic looking even in her beauty, which, you know, a typical British beauty I don't think would have had that. But knowing that she's, once you find out her lineage and her genetics, I think it makes a little bit of sense why she could have been this more striking look.
Right. He does even call her a star. Dickens even refers to her as a star.
Yes.
And then, but she's always walking in these dark hallways.
Mm-hmm. But she's in some ways she's a contrast to Miss Havisham because she is the beauty, you know, whereas Miss Havisham is old and falling apart and decaying, but she is the beauty in this dark area. Right, so is. And that's what Pip was attracted to. And one thing about Estella is at some point she does, there are a couple different times later on when she says things that hint to the fact that to Pip, to, you know, to let him know that I cannot feel for you, you know, to let him know, I forget exactly where it is, but she says things like that just to kind of trying to stop him, you know, from
she warns him.
It's like she's warning. Yes, right. She's warning him. So in that case, she does have some feeling, you know, it's like, okay, there's a little bit of feeling there because she is warning him that this is what I do. I can't do anything else. And, you know, So
yeah, when he reproaches her, or is trying to win her heart, yes, and basically she, you know, he says, you know, this it's nature to feel, and she says it's not my nature,
not my
because
nature.
She recognizes again, not because she chose it, but because of the circumstances, she recognizes she's self-aware enough to recognize. It's not my nature. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, as the novel unfolds and everything, that's why I love whatever ending you choose, whichever one you think Dickens should have chosen to publish. Either way, she's changed because of the suffering and the sorrow. And so I'm happy with either ending, mm-hmm. simply because Estella comes out of those situations, out of that suffering, with a softened heart and an empathy and a compassion that she wouldn't have had.
Yes, yes. Well, let's move on now to Miss Havisham. I know it's hard for me to say the British things, but I think it's interesting that Denby calls her a living ghost. so let's talk about Miss Havisham. Go ahead, yeah. Deborah.
Well, she definitely is a living ghost. I mean, she's definitely one of the most amazing characters in literature, probably. You know, I mean, Dickens really had quite an idea with her, because the idea that everything could be stopped in the house from the time that she heard that the person she was going to marry had left her, and she was jilted basically, and that she'd be wearing the same dress. That's kind of almost impossible to imagine that she'd be wearing the same
and only
same
one
dress
shoe
and one shoe and one shoe. I mean, the descriptions of the wedding table and everything are just amazing. But you know, she her whole life has been one of revenge on men. And so she's definitely an amazing character. But the neat thing about her is she does change at the end too. So, you know, so that's interesting. And she does have some, you know, feeling at the end. And you know, so someone else can talk about that. But that's why I think is interesting, that she does change.
She kind of reminds me of the Mummy. You know, if you want to get a movie view, it's like the Mummy, like there's these bugs crawling out of her hair and all that stuff.
But some of the most dramatic scenes are with her, and then the fire and, you know, and all that. That's really dramatic. So,
okay, we only have a few seconds. Sarah, any more comments on Miss Havisham?
I think just to follow up, you know, she is a very striking, scary character to a young Pip. But even at the very beginning, I think he feels a little sorry for her, even though you don't quite understand why. She's just this strange woman. But to see her remorse and her repentance, because she sees how deeply Pip feels. And so there's a contrast there, that she's Miss Havisham is damaged because of a false love, and it's cured by seeing a true love. Now, again, whether how Pip truly loved Estella, I'm still not sure, but that's kind of what fixes her.
He is very kind to her, that even when before he goes to London, he goes back and says goodbye to her, which of course then she takes advantage of it, lets him believe that you know, she's the one behind all of the good fortune, but we know she's not. Okay, one little quick thing now. What about Miss Belinda Pocket? She's the last one. What can we say about her in just a few short seconds here?
Well, she's obviously not maternal.
she's not one
of those women that are not maternal at all. And she lets her baby play with needles, you know, the family is being run by servants. At one point, Pip says he's not really sure how the family is being run. He realizes it's the servants, because Mr. Pocket and Mrs. Pocket are not really paying attention. And so she really, all she's interested in is the fact that her grandfather should have had a title, and somehow he just barely missed it, and so that's all she's interested in.
She should have been a duchess. She felt. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah.
She's one of those where, when you first meet her, because she's not openly, overtly mean. She's just clueless about everything in her, you know, everything going on around her, and most clueless about her children.
Yeah, which is really sad.
Yeah, very, very sad. And then you do start to see her being more, whenever her children or somebody else imposes upon whatever she wants, then it's suddenly, well, you know, I should be someone important, so how dare you do that? So she's slightly more bumbling about it than maybe Mrs. Joe, who just seemed to be actively mean. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Yeah, she has no touch with reality. Neither does, you know, her husband. You know, he's the whole scene of him pulling out his hair at dinner when she tells Jane not to talk back to her, when Jane said, "Look, the kid's going to put his eye out," you know.
Yeah.
So okay. One last final comment. Any comments from you,
Well, you wonder,
Mr.
What,
Hope.
You wonder what Pip is really doing in the Pocket family, you know, in terms of he's supposed to be there to be trained, I guess, in some way. You wonder what
to
kind,
be a gentleman.
Of training is going on to yeah. be a gentleman in this kind of environment, but because Mrs. Pocket is the ultimate airhead.
Right. Sure yes. Or you wonder how Herbert turned out as good as he did.
Yes.
They
yeah.
don't explain
yes.
in any way
no.
how.
No, it's amazing. No. He does. Yeah.
Yeah, well, we could get into that. We can go back all the way. Go all the way back to Pride and Prejudice. Mm-hmm. We've already been yeah. through it. Okay. So it looks like we're running out of time. So I'd very much like to hear what you have to say about our Summer of Classic series. Next time now, we'll be bringing our men's panel onto JBL to discuss the male characters in Great Expectations. So please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcog.org. You can follow JBL on Twitter @JBLiterature1. You can also follow JBL on Facebook. Simply search for Just the Best Literature, and remember, you can leave me a comment on Facebook. So, until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.